I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hola a todos, bonjour, bonsoir, bon après-midi. How's everybody doing? Have you ever wondered if there's power in your story? Well, you're in luck, because today's episode is with a master storyteller, but also someone who outlines why your superpower is indeed in your story. Why that is the best way that you can actually make a difference. And so we dive into his cross-culture story as someone who came here from the old Soviet Union to Kentucky, what he learned, how he found himself, how he turned his identity crisis into a gift, how he moved around and navigated several businesses and navigated away from debt to success, and ultimately what led him down the path where he's creating such a powerful platform for millennials and Gen Zers. So if you're someone right now who's struggling with an identity crisis, doubting whether you're enough, this is an episode that I hope really peps you up. Check out the episode. And as always, please feel free to send me messages. I read every single one of them. Enjoy.
In a world where very few people embrace their global identity and seek to understand their neighbors, cross-cultural expert Tayo Roxon is on a mission to bridge this divide. Each week, he'll open your mind with insights from some of the global minds in the world. Get ready, take some notes, and learn how to be the best you that you can be.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of As Told by Nomads. And today's guest is Yuri Krumen. I'm very, very excited to have Yuri on the show. He's a trusted executive, career and life coach, and professional strategist for millennials. I'm a millennial. You're a millennial. Everyone's a millennial. And he's based in New York City. As a member of Forbes Career Council and CEO and founder of Master to Talk Career Consulting, he's helped clients of all career stages, industries, and job markets around the world to chart a clear path on their careers, build confidence, and understand along the way how important their stories are. He's also an advisory board member of the Customer Experience Program at Rutgers University's for Center of Innovation Education. And since 2013, he shared his expertise and empower people with knowledge that they need to find, compete for, and win their dream, revamping their resumes, acing that interview, and negotiating for that title and salary that they deserve. Welcome to the show, Yuri.
Thank you so much for having me on, Tayo. Really, really excited to be here.
Well, the pleasure is mine. Your background is one that really strikes me as fascinating. And I get to interview so many people all over the world. I really consider it an education of many sorts. And your story is one that has struck me as one of the most fascinating, really. So share the story with the world. You grew up as Russian, and then you found yourself where?
Well, imagine you grew up in Kentucky, and when you're 9, Soviet Union just fell, and you know your mom gets a job in Lexington, Kentucky. So that's where we went. That's where I grew up. And you know what? I'm actually really, really happy that I grew up there and not, let's say, New York, because this is a crazy place. Now I'm raising kids. Now I see it. But you know, grew up in the South, maybe not the deepest South, but still a lot of the same things. And you know, people stab you in the back, but they're really, really nice otherwise. I recently went back for my oldest friend's wedding, which was in Kentucky, and you know, I took a trip back to Lexington to meet a lot of my old professors and my mentors, and in some ways, that was one of the most fulfilling things I've ever done, because now I'm coming with, let's say, a copy of my novel, and it's a very, very different sort of thing, and you get to see, okay, I'm definitely, at least in some ways, a better version of myself than I was in high school. So,
No, and then, you know, when I imagine when you come to America when you're nine, it's Kentucky, and you're Russian, what were some of those challenges? What were the identity crisis? You know, what were those challenges to fit in that you really had to deal with?
Well, this comes on several levels. One is, of course, this is just after the Soviet Union fell. And as you can imagine, everyone's like, oh, Russian. So you're like a Ruski or this. You know, there's a lot of, frankly, ignorance about what the hell is Russian. Mm. And a lot of hype. Well, are you a spy? You know, now we can all laugh about it because of the Americans. And then we start crying because of the election. But, you know, you get the idea. So there was always this thing like blame the Russian. And I remember in the senior year of high school, I wrote a little skit for a yearbook benefit. And I had my U.S. history teacher, who happens to share my birthday, and I gave him a hammer and sickle as a gift. Anyways, so I had him as part of the skit where he runs out and like disrupts our meeting of secret communists in the school and whatever, and everyone had a great laugh. But you know, it took some time to get there, to get that comfort.
Yeah, no. it's fascinating with you, because I often say, as a kid, you know, I you moved in nine, I moved when I was 10. Visibly, I mean, I'd moved early when I was a kid, but I was too much of a baby. Yep. In Sweden. So, but when I was 10, and I continued to find myself in all these areas, you know, this skinny Nigerian kid with a Nigerian accent in a French-speaking country in an American international school going through puberty. I know, right? I remember saying, you know, this was an identity crisis. I was initially excited, and then I had to figure out how to turn that identity crisis into a gift. And yep. You say something that I love. I say fascinating a lot, but I really mean this is fascinating. Your story is your biggest asset. And that's what I learned how to do. I learned how to figure out my story. So talk to me about why you feel like people's stories are their biggest assets.
Yeah. So this is it's not an easy subject for a lot of people, because, you know, everybody goes through a lot of failures. And it's even before you go through failures, let's say you're in high school and you're figuring out who's a freak, who's a geek, where do I fit? Am I, you know, I'm definitely not a jock. And, where's my place? I'm a Jewish kid in a, you know, very much Christian country. And like, who am I? What am I? And, you know, I need to, usually in high school or before then, you need to hide yourself because you need to fit in, you need to speak a certain language, you know, think a certain way. In Kentucky, you have to talk about basketball because it's basketball country. You know, I bleed blue, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, my mom was horrified when she would like come home and catch me watching ESPN, or like we had the Cubs on for some reason. And, those kinds of experiences, they build up that kind of baggage, the proverbial things that you don't want others to find out because, you know, I'm just a regular kid in high school. Or when you get to college, oh, whatever, I'm just like, you know, another Jewish kid and thousands of Jewish kids here. So every level, you kind of bury the things that actually make you interesting. And, you know, the research that you do about yourself and your surroundings and your background, that usually stays in the background. And so you realize, you know what, actually, this is what gives me the commonalities to talk to anybody, to relate to anybody, to understand them, to speak their language, to think like them, you know. And maybe it's not a coincidence that I was an anthropology major, because, you know, my whole life I've been to that point trying to fit in and understand and learn about all the intricacies of, you know, certain tribes somewhere or whatever. But in the end, you're still who you are. You're still from your background. You still carry the baggage of your genetics and your culture and, you know, the way that your parents screwed you up or whatever, you know, and also all the richness of their cultures and religion and the science and everything else that comes with it. So at some point, excuse me, you realize that actually that is the baggage, the stuff that you hide from others in order to fit in at your workplace or wherever, is actually the most interesting part. That is actually what people find fascinating, and that's what they want to learn. That's what they want to take advantage of. And that's what becomes ultimately the most valuable part of your, let's say, portfolio career, right? Millennials, we think about this all the time. Right. So I'm a novel writer and I'm a startup advisor. And, you know, I do executive coaching and career coaching and I work with millennials and Gen Xers and, you know, everything in between and all over the place. Right. So for me, I have a lot of things in my wheelhouse. Yeah. And that's what makes it valuable and interesting when, let's say, I meet somebody and they're from an industry maybe I didn't even work in, but I can relate to them on those multiple levels. Maybe I know something about the Cubs because I watched them as a kid, and this guy is from Chicago, you know, or maybe I can call up Teo and say, hey, you know what? I wrote a chapter on Nigeria in my first novel, and we can, you know, I'm definitely not just like a random dude who knows nothing about Nigeria, you know? I mean, there's a lot of richness in that fabric that you fold away for, you know, the photo, for the official family or business photo. And that's actually a shame. That's where the interesting stuff lies.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love what you're saying because when I was that kid, you know, for me, the only way that I used to connect as a kid before I moved to the American International School was sports. And at the time, the only sport I knew how to play was soccer. So I looked around me and I saw that the people were playing, you know, basketball. So I learned how to play basketball. And our one-on-ones became two-on-twos and three-on-threes and four-on-fours and five-on-fives. But the interesting thing that happened was that became – my accent didn't matter. My the fact that we all came from different backgrounds didn't matter. And I started to see what could happen if we learned how to tap into our inner gifts and work together from different backgrounds for one common goal. And that's sort of what, you know, led to kind of what I do right now where I'm – you know, it's similar to what you do where I help people communicate across cultures but also help people communicate their stories with impact. Because I feel like there's power with stories. And even when I was a kid, that might have felt like something that was isolating because you want to always fit in. Now you look at the world, right? You alluded to it earlier. The election sort of causes the division. You have this thing going on in Europe and in Africa, and people just don't know how to listen to each other. I find that backgrounds like yours, where you had to be the minority everywhere you were, now play a big role in our global world and in our digital world because that's something you've naturally been doing all this while.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And at some point, you learn not just how to do it well and how to tell your story. I mean, we're going to, I guess, get into my particular story a little bit more. On the professional side, this is where things get even much hairier, right? So one thing is, okay, I'm a Russian kid in Kentucky. Or, you know, I'm, let's say, moving to UPenn where I did my undergrad and I'm like the secular Russian kid in a Orthodox Jewish community, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But when I got to the stage after undergrad, I moved to New York and, you know, here I am in a PhD program at NYU doing neuroscience because, hey, you know, my grades for med school weren't good enough. So here I am at NYU. I'm like trying to sort of make sense. Okay, I'm doing neuroscience. And what happened during that first year when I was there, I started my first company. And you're going to love this one. I still have the t-shirts. It was called juicyjuice.com.
What?
Yeah, I know, right? It sounds completely ridiculous. And where did this come from, right? I built the first global group on Facebook. It was under the profile of Judah the Maccabee, who was the hero of Hanukkah. And I just basically created an algorithm which, you know, told me, you know, who's Jewish or not. And I sort of tried to bring a whole bunch of Jewish kids together in one place, you know, for like a social network. That was kind of like the first Jewish social network. And then juicyjuice.com was like a business built on that. And I launched it and, you know, it was a spike in traffic and it died. But I got the taste of what it's like to build a company, and that's why I came back to it eventually.
Wow, wow. And you've done a lot of things. So in your life, right, you talk about someone that has lived a crazy life. Let's look at Yuri Kruman here for a second. You changed careers a total of four times while living with $250,000 in law school debt in New York City. I live in New York City. I've had the debt from business school. I know what that's like, but $250,000 is not something that I've ever experienced. So how did you go about changing? I'm sure you wouldn't recommend it. I know. But how did you go about changing your career four times while living in that debt? And how did you get out of that debt?
Yeah. So let's kind of start at the beginning. So I'm in that first year of grad school at NYU. And it's just plainly obvious that I don't belong here. Like, this is not what I pictured. And this is not what I'm meant to be doing. Because I love to have my finger in 10 pots at the same time. That's in the grad school. You focus on one subject, et cetera. So I left, and you know what? I need practical experience. I know I need a grad degree because, hey, I'm an immigrant, and you know, my mom didn't bring me here to just twiddle my thumbs and figure myself out, quote unquote. This was a conversation. So I go work as a paralegal, and then I start law school. And while I'm in law school, I'm doing all kinds of crazy internships. There's a lady on Fifth Avenue who does legal consulting. Don't ask me what the hell that is. then I'm working for a hedge fund. I'm working for an insurance defense litigation firm. All kinds of different things. But by the time I graduate, it's 2009, and it's the recession. We're right in the middle of it. I can't really find a job. And it's just plainly obvious I'm also not meant to be practicing law because it's just – it's not the way I see the world. It's a nice – skill set, it's a great thing to know, but it's not what I'm meant to do. So I go into finance to pay the bills, and I do one project, another project, and I'm just also starting to see that I'm not connected here. I'm not bringing my best every day because this is not my thing. I'm helping make wealthy people wealthier. That's not really – not fitting with who I am. So eventually, a friend of mine comes and he says, I remember you giving me a great idea about how to do a certain concept in medicine. So you know what? I'm building a company. I want to create something consumer-centric in health insurance. Do you want to do this with me? So I said, well, of course. So I'm working in a bank. This is when, you know, the kind of whole protest against Wall Street was happening across the street from my bank.
Occupy Wall Street, yeah.
Occupy Wall Street was right across the street from me. And I got requests, you know, can I come in the building and film? But anyway, so I'm building a startup on the side in health tech and health insurance. I'm working in the bank, and I'm starting to transition into startups. And even though that one failed because you need, you know, 5 to 10 million at the table to get the licenses, I got the taste again. I need to be in startups. It's more my speed. I love health tech because I was always concerned about my health, and my own personal story figured into my interest in healthcare. And again, I came back to that when I started opening up, you know what, this is what I should be doing. And I've actually stayed in health tech as an advisor, but eventually I got tired of working for other people in other people's startups, hoping that the equity will vest. And I started my own company when I realized, you know what, I have to work with startup entrepreneurs on my own terms. I mean, I need to get paid. Not in equity. I need to get paid in real hard cash. And basically, after that last career change, I really, you know, first kind of tried, okay, I'm pretty good at coaching. I love talking to people, helping them formulate stories and, you know, get dream jobs and negotiate a higher salary. That's all great. But is this really what I'm meant to do? And, you know, you start finding that kind of language and psychology. And I realized, oh my God, this actually is the reason why I went through all that hell of law school debt and changing careers and, you know, being jobless for long periods of time and, you know, raising kids here and marrying someone from a different culture. Like all of that absolute madness had to happen so that I can help other people in that situation to, you know, take shortcuts to great results. That's why I had to go through all that. And that's really why I think this is so interesting, why I want to come back to this idea of your story is your greatest asset.
Yeah.
Because that's, for me, it came out, you know, almost against my will because I'm always at that point referencing myself against, okay, I went to an Ivy League school, so look at all the great things, you know, my classmates are doing and where am I, right? That starts to lose its value when you realize what your actual mission is because you're not comparing yourself with anyone on the left or the right. It's against your own potential. That's the only thing that matters. It's not about anything anyone else is doing. God bless them. They should be successful. But my mission is X, and I need to go and do everything against that mission to make sure that, you know, I fulfill my purpose here.
Thank you so much for sharing. And that's such a powerful thing. And you know, the reason why I really wanted you to share that is because a lot of times I talk to a lot of people. I don't know if you know the term TCK, but that's who you are.
Like it or not.
Yes, that's who you are. And that's what I am. And third culture kids. So when I started the podcast, it was based on that premise. I wanted to show how initially third culture kids can teach people how to embrace the global identity. And the most amazing thing happened. Obviously I gradually built a community of TCKs, but then other people that weren't TCKs started to resonate with the podcast because they found a lot of themselves in the story, where sometimes they felt, I felt different before, I felt that before, I didn't feel like my story was there. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, when I start to say, use your difference to make a difference, which is the mission of everything I do on the podcast. Because everybody has a difference. Everybody likes to think sometimes that because someone has done something before, that that means that they can't do it. But the thing mm-hmm. that no one else can do better than you is be you, right?
Exactly. That's the only thing. That's all you got.
So it's interesting to hear you say that. And you don't have to have traveled to 29 different countries or all that, but you have to be able to say, this is who I am as me, and this is what I bring to the table. And I think once you start doing that, you start to unlock the key to what it is your purpose is. So let's segue from that into how to craft your own companion. Sorry, you okay?
Sorry, just got a cough.
I'll send you some hot tea now. Let's segue into how to craft your own compelling narrative and brand out of unconventional background. Because you have a company, right? Your company is Master to Talk Career Consultant. Imagine you help a lot of people craft their own compelling narrative. A lot of people, like I said earlier, say, there's nothing interesting about me, whatever. I stayed here in one town in the same place, whatever. Uh-huh. How do you get them to get out of that mindset?
I'm going to give you a great example. So one of my clients is one of my absolute best clients, right? So he comes from a background which on paper is like, okay, just, you know, regular white dude, and he works at an investment bank, and, you know, he went to a school down south, great school, and, you know, everything is like in some ways plain vanilla, like really high level plain vanilla, but still. So the first thing that I do with each of my clients, regardless of whether it's on the career side or startup side, is to go through four pillars that are part of my methodology, just to run quickly through this. First is life mission, meaning when you're away from your usual context, your bills, you know, family, all the pressures, what problem do you want to solve for yourself intellectually, purely selfishly, life mission. Second is values. What kinds of traits are common to the people that you choose to spend time with in your life? Maybe mentors, or maybe certain kinds of friends, or professors, or rabbis, ministers, you name it, right? Right. What is common to them? Are they kind, generous, hilarious, brilliant? They empower you? What is it? So find the commonality and stick with it, because those are the kinds of people you want in your life. Third is outcomes. Outcomes is looking at not deliverables, not spreadsheets or reports. It's looking at things like, what do I like to give to other people? Is it delight, meaning maybe I write music or I write poetry and I really hit them in the gut? I really make them feel something different. Or maybe it's a cheaper, better, faster business process. Maybe it's empowerment. Maybe it's curation, right? What process do you take other people through in your natural organic state? And the last one is role. Role is not about title, right? It's about what is your natural role in any situation. We're doing volunteer work. And I come to you, I say, Teo, you know, I know you're the best in the world at this, but you're also, you love it. So what is this, right? How do we frame that? So those four pieces, life, mission, values, outcomes, and role. Plus we look at negative scripts, things holding you back. And we look at founding stories, which is things like your mentors, your professors, people that influenced how you make decisions, how you see yourself, your role in the world, and what you're meant to do, right? And you put those six pieces together and you have a much clearer picture. So taking a client, the same client, through that process in 90 minutes, you know, again, like I said, you know, kind of plain vanilla dude is just sitting there, you know, on break from his investment bank at lunch. And I realize from his conversation that he's like, I don't know if I told you, my mom is black. I'm like, okay, you're like, you're hiding in plain sight. I would never be able to tell that. There's just nothing. He's like, oh yeah. And by the way, when I was born, I could eat five foods. I'm like, are you kidding me? This is gold. This is absolute gold. Like, you don't realize that what you've been through and growing up literally hiding in plain sight, you're always the observer. You're always the one who's sort of, you know, in that role of seeing what everyone else is doing and trying to fit in and speaking their language and psychology, right? I'm like, you're a born coach. Maybe you should go do this. No. But you see what I'm saying? Like, something that he would not really share with someone unless he felt comfortable with them, right? I mean, he's not going to say, oh, yeah, my mom is black, or, you know, I could eat only five foods when I was born. It's not something that comes up naturally in conversation with people, right? And
yeah,
it came right out in 90 minutes. And he's like, oh, my God, you're absolutely right. You nailed who I am. You gave me the key to what I need to be doing in this life. And then, of course, you know, he goes and he finds all kinds of crazy interviews.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Who's at Google and NFL? So all you have to do sometimes is just unlock that key, which means you need to, first of all, listen, to be a very good listener, and use what you have, right? Use your powers of observation. Use your ability to relate someone based on their language or culture or whatever. Maybe because you watched the Cubs as a kid. You know, it doesn't matter. And based on that, you unlock the key from anybody, from any person who's willing to tell you their story.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That is so powerful. And those are great pillars. I don't know if this happens to you, but sometimes when I go on stage and I share a story of, you know, I was maybe I didn't feel like I was Nigerian enough at some point, or I felt like even though I wasn't necessarily African-American, I was still sort of seen as African-American, and I wore that badge because I understood some of the challenges that went to that. Some people that look like me will mm-hmm. come up to me after the talk. This is after everyone's gone. And they'll be like, you know, I didn't want to ask the question there, but thank you for sharing that story because you're giving me an opportunity to see myself in that. And it reminds me of that story with the client of yours where a lot of people, they almost inadvertently hide some of the basic facts about themselves. And when they finally see someone else telling that story, they're like, oh my goodness, maybe it is special. Maybe I should talk about that more. And so I was just thinking when the guy said, I can only eat 5 foods. My mom is black. A lot of times we take all those things for granted. And then when you finally have someone like yourself point that out, it becomes this aha moment. Or if they see someone like themselves on stage and they're like, wait, that guy just has something similar with me. And he's talking about it with the world like it's something special. Maybe I should acknowledge that as something special for me as well. And that could be the key that I need to get on my path and my destiny.
You got it. Exactly. Man. You know, what am I doing? I'm not sitting here as some kind of a guru or figurehead. All I'm doing is listening, number one, and then I'm really giving them context, right? I'm telling them that, you know, on the one hand, your story is incredibly unique. On the other hand, the problems that you're going through are really banal. There have been thousands, millions of people that have gone through this. What you need to do is learn from those that have gone through it successfully, that have emerged on the other side.
Yes.
Learn from them, understand what they did, and replicate their formula. That's it.
Man. And all the greatest ones in the world, the greatest speakers, the greatest coaches, the greatest leaders, they all share their story in some way or some form. Yep. And it came out of a moment of pain. It came out of a moment of a need to connect. But if you look at people like Nelson Mandela, Oprah Winfrey, who happen to be two of my biggest role models, or J.K. Rowling, for example, with the Harry Potter series and all that, the authenticity shines through when they share a lot of their stories. Because when you share your story, one, you allow people to see you as a human. You know, a lot of times stories are portrayed about successful people in such a way that it's almost unattainable. Like they're gods. Like they never faced any failure. But when you hear someone go through a process, go through several ups and downs, or go through all this, you're like, wait, I can do that too. Like, this is not something that's unattainable for me. And there is a journey, and I'm going through that journey, and I will continuously persevere. That's why you were able to get out $250,000 in debt. That's why you were able to turn your identity crisis into a gift. And that's why you were able to, you know, move to a new city and, you know, and deal with your identity and understand that being yourself is the most important thing in the world today.
Exactly. And the key is, you know, this is it's not the end point. This is just, you know, I'm in the middle. I mean, hopefully not even the middle.
Not even in the middle. I was about to say, not even in the middle. You know? Like, we're like, we still have a lot of light to live. Okay, so then how do you translate that into a niche? You know, the other thing people always say is, okay, fine. I know how to tell my compelling story, but how do I find my compelling and highly profitable niche? I mean, I want to make money out of this, but what's the best way to turn this into something that can actually serve me and others?
Okay, so here's where we turn the tables, right? So let's say you're a client of mine who's trying to go from investment banking to tech, just for example, right? Let's say you come to me and, you know, I don't know how to do that. Like, I know I want to get out of here, but I don't know what kinds of, you know, tech companies I'm interested in. I don't know what really I connect to. I just know I want to get out of here. That's the usual scenario. So I'm stuck, get unstuck. So let's take them through the four pillars and founding stories and negative scripts, and we really talk through and get that personal angle with something that they connect to. Maybe they were sick as a kid, and maybe they should go and try to help improve health outcomes by working in health tech. And, you know, maybe they know all about deal formation, financial modeling, et cetera. That might get them a gig in finance and operations. It's quite common. Or they're much better with dealing with people and selling, and okay, go do biz dev or sales, right? But the key is first you take the bedrock of who someone is as a human, and then you say, okay, these are the threads, right? This is the art. This is not the science anymore. The art is taking the threads that person has given you. All the raw material is on the table, and I, as the curator, say, okay, as someone who's hired for startups, this is what I need to see in you in a call or meeting or interview in order to give you a chance. If I'm talking to you, that means you're already qualified. I know that you can do the job. But I want to make sure that behaviorally you're a good fit. So the vast majority of that prep for the interview, the call, the meeting, is behavioral. If you come in looking like an investment banking kind of character and you have your Armani suit and whatever, if I'm an entrepreneur, I'm not going to look at that very favorably. I want you to look like someone who works here. I want you to speak like someone who's a startup guy or gal, right? Basically, get right to the point. Don't give me the whole spiel, the whole corporate tease, whatever. Come down to, maybe not come down to my level, come up to my level, right, if I'm one of those guys. But basically, speak my language. Think as I think. Care about my business needs. That's what really matters, you know? Yes, I need to know that you're really the two things that are most important, let's say, to go into a startup is one is you're motivated by the right things, meaning you're not just here because it's a cool startup and we just got a bunch of money, but you're in health tech because you had health issues as a kid and you were able to overcome them and you always think about improving other people's health outcomes. And the other thing is it's not about what you know. It's not about your pure brilliance and what you've studied. It's about how quickly can you learn. Right. So my whole thing is after getting the four pillars and that, you know, the material with which we work, now I shape it into exactly what it needs to look like for that particular audience. Right. And for my startup clients, I would help them to shape that message into their investor deck, right? Or for their email to potential advisors or how they want to get potential employees, right? Different messages for each audience, but it's still working with the same raw material. And that's what makes it amazing for me. I get to play with that Play-Doh all day.
Yeah. No, that must be so fun too. I mean, so much fun. That's incredible. So you get to do that. And then obviously, you know, people follow that. They follow that step-by-step process and they understand how they can build a niche in a crowded market. Okay. And then if they say, okay, I've built my niche in a crowded market, I have established a personal brand, what type of mindset do you feel like they need to cultivate? For me, I think a lot of people talk about competence and it's a great, great, great thing to have, but that has to work in tandem with mindset because there will be inevitable challenges along the way. There'll be failures and there'll be times when you question yourself. So how do you coach your clients to deal with that mental struggles.
Okay, so let's sort this into two different critical components, right? So on the one hand, when I work with a client and let's say they want a job or they want somebody to invest in them, right? the first and most important thing is to bring value to that person, right? Don't go asking for money or, you know, give me a job because of my pretty eyes or whatever, right? Go and serve, right? You should want to serve others through your mission. And if that mission involves working for someone, then show them what your mission is, right? And show them how you can bring tangible value from day one so that they don't have to hold your hand. Okay? Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, this is in some ways, like, both of these components are what most people miss. Even if they're brilliant, even if, you know, they have the perfect credentials, they miss the value and the service part. And they, at the same time, they miss the second component, which is having a buyer's mindset. We know this from finance. Buyer, you're in the best situation when you're a buyer because everyone is dancing around you in order to get your business, right? As opposed to being a seller where you have to go through your pitch and it's annoying. What do I mean by buyer's mindset? Buyer's mindset means when you approach an opportunity, meaning to go work for someone, you have to think, you know, work for someone or to get their investment. Instead of wanting to sell yourself per se, right, you should want to understand, okay, how is my investment of time, sweat, equity, is this going to be the best investment in this partner, meaning in my boss, in, you know, his or her company, or the money from this VC? Will this be the best partnership, right?
Yeah.
For me, for my goals, for my life mission? Will this bring me closer to where I need to go? And most people are running around in circles. Oh my God, I need to change my resume and my LinkedIn. And oh my God, you know, how do I sell myself? Sell, 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 right? It's not about selling. You tell your story well, and that person reacts in the right way to hearing your story. Of course, you have to have your story down right and you have to address their business needs, yes. But in making your decision as to where to go work or with whom to work or whose money to accept in your startup, you need to come as a buyer. Because your investment of time working for them or, you know, sweat equity in your business will either bring you closer to your life mission, your goals, or mm-hmm. it will take you farther away.
Right.
If you don't have that straight, it's going to be a disaster.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, dropping knowledge bombs here. I really appreciate that. So that would be a disaster if you really don't do that. And mm-hmm. everything works in tandem. You know, it starts with knowing your story, knowing why you and your values and all those things that you mentioned. But also if you're going to really commit to the work of turning that into a service, that, you know, that's also some work that you have to do. And that involves a lot of self-awareness, a lot of you working towards understanding the terrain, the environment that you're putting yourself into, and then going back to who you are, knowing how that value plays a role in this terrain. That's wow. Okay. As we get ready to wrap up, I want to give the audience another chance to get a glimpse of your other aspects. You know, you're a multifaceted individual. You've done a lot already, but, you know, you're based in New York City. You're based in New York City. You published two novels of fiction, poetry. You live with your wife. Your wife is French, and you have two kids. So let's start with the wife piece. You're Russian. They came to America. You're married to a French woman. Whoa, tell me how that works.
Oh, it's a very romantic story, but I won't bore you with the details too much.
I love, man. That's not boring. You know, I'm not like the – I love everything.
All right. Okay. All right. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with Lubavitch or Chabad House. I mean, they're all over the world. Basically, it's a Jewish place for, you know, Jewish kids to gather and, you know, maybe meet their future spouse or maybe to have a dinner on Friday night. Or,
right.
I don't know. Pick up some knowledge, hopefully. So my wife was at Columbia, and she went to this Chabad house. I came there for dinner. I was sort of seeing someone and was on break with them at the time, and I see this French girl. I'm like, okay, very interesting. So at the end of the dinner, it was actually a Jewish holiday of Sukkot, Feast of Tabernacles. And, you know, like I'm talking to my friend the whole time. I'm like, man, who's that girl? Who's that girl? So I go at the end of the dinner and ask her, I'm so sorry for the forward question. What is that perfume you're wearing? She kind of looks at me like, okay, it's Euphoria. Okay. 2 minutes later, my friend goes ask the same question. She's like, I don't know what's going on here. Go ask your friend. So that was our first encounter. Then, you know, I saw her once, twice, you know, five times, and she forgot my name every single time. Remembers, oh, you're a Russian, you're a lawyer, but I'm so sorry I forgot your name. And the fifth time I said, look, my name is Yuri, and from now on you're going to remember, because that's enough. And 2 weeks, get this, 2 weeks later, I'm on J-Date, and I'm like, oh, hot list. I didn't realize I knew this girl. She gets back to me, and she's like, okay, you're at, you know, Columbia, you're on J-Date, Facebook, what's the deal? I'm like, all right, enough nonsense. Let's go for a drink. So, you know, we go for a drink at the MoMA. There's a beautiful bar there. If you ever need a date place, it's phenomenal. Mm. So get there, and you know, I'm waiting, and she walks in the door, and my jaw drops. I kind of have to put it, you know, a little bit back in place. So I had this amazing date. You know, I ordered the drink that she loved. She ordered the drink that I loved, and we, like, just, you know, I found out all these other things about her. She's an engineer, grew up in Morocco, and you know, next thing I know, it's 3 a.m. and we're still out on our date. Oh my God, this is amazing. So we're both at that time, we were living, each of us, with our friends. We didn't have an apartment to call our own. And, you know, we went on three dates, and second one was 25 hours and super romantic.
Wait, wait, 25 hours?
25 hours.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyways, I said romantic, I meant it. So, you know, then she goes away for 5 weeks. You know, her grandparents are in Paris. Her aunt is there. Mom is in Morocco. Her dad is in Bali, of all places. So she, like, goes to visit all of them between grad school and, you know, starting to work. So she comes back, and guess what? Her visa, you know, there's a one-year OPT.
Yeah.
Her visa got sent back from her address. Like, uh-oh. So we kind of had the movie Green Card, we kind of had that play out. So we both don't have a place to live, and we're having drinks. I get an email, says a friend of mine, I'm moving out. I want to keep this among friends. It's Columbia Housing. It's like under the table. And like, listen, I know this is totally nuts. I know we just went on three dates, but like, we both need a place to live. So she's like, all right, let me talk to my mom, my grandma. And they said yes. So we moved in, and the same week I went to get a ring, and we did the civil ceremony. She needed a two for the papers. And yeah, then, you know, 11 months later, after she took me to Morocco, and her parents were like, all right, he's fine. He maybe speaks a little French even. So we got married. We did the religious ceremony. And, you know, that's how we got started.
Wow.
Pretty wild.
Wow. I mean, I can see why you're a novelist now. I mean, you're such a great storyteller.
Because there's a lot of stories.
you said, you know, the movie Green Card. This reminds me of the proposal with Ryan Reynolds and Sandra Bullock. Yeah. It's like, okay, all right, this is cool. Thank you for sharing that. I love that. Well, then, did any of that play out in your books? Because you also, you know, you don't just consult and work with millennials in career placement, but you published two novels of fiction and poetry. I'm just curious if any of that romantic notions played into your books.
Well, there's no question. I mean, without too many details, fiction is not born in a vacuum. we'll leave it there.
Okay. Well, where can they find your books then, and your works of fiction?
On Amazon, you know, barnesandnoble.com, pretty much any of those kinds of websites.
All right. And I'll make sure I put that in the show notes. But before we leave, I have to definitely give you an opportunity to talk about what you do with your companies and where people can, you know, go to sign up, maybe for the master to talk, career consulting, or any other thing that you're up to. So just pitch away.
Okay. All right. So my company, as I mentioned, is half kind of career/executive coaching, half startup advising. The website is very simple, masterthetalk.com. And I'm also starting to move into more corporate consulting on, you know, subjects like, of course, millennial hiring and, you know, attraction and how to create a customer experience that appeals to millennials. That's one side. I'm also doing more speaking, and you know, there's always more to do. Maybe I'll be a podcaster one day, but for now, I love doing things like As Told by Nomads. there's a book in the works, actually three books in the works, but there's a lot. But basically, those are the two big pieces of my practice. It's career and executive coaching for millennials that want to change careers, and there's the startup advising side, helping health tech, fintech, and other companies to go from ideas to raising money and hiring professional managers.
Okay. Well, I do want to thank you for coming on the show. This has been such a fascinating journey for me. And anyone listening that's a third culture kid, that's a nomad, or anyone that doesn't identify with either, just understand that your story is your superpower. And it's ultimately what can get you out of any of those difficult situations. And as soon as you learn how to own your story and deal with the challenges, you become more confident with whatever business you have and whatever goals you hope to achieve. So, Yuri, before we leave, I have to ask you this. I ask all my guests this question. My mission statement is use your difference to make a difference. It's what I firmly believe. It's why I'm committed to building the next set of global leaders, and I want people to tap into their inner greatness. So how do you, Yuri, use your difference to make a difference?
Well, I basically use my own story to help others unlock theirs so that they can create opportunity out of nothing.
Okay. Your story to unlock theirs to help them create opportunity out of nothing. Short, succinct, to the point, and powerful at the same time. Thank you, Yuri.
Thank you so much, Theo. It's really been a great hour.
Oh, no, it has. It has. This has been fun. And I'll make sure I put everything in the show notes. But thank you for being great. Thank you for spending the time. And till next week, ladies and gentlemen, or next time, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.